guys. Welcome to Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm your host, Kelly Walker, and joining me today is guest April Snow. Hey, April.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for taking time to hop on the show. I'm really excited about our conversation.
Same, yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Before we get started, do you mind if I share a little bit more about you with our audience?
Please do. Thank you.
Awesome. April Snow, LMFT, is a licensed psychotherapist in California, who specializes in working with highly sensitive introverts, perfectionists, and high achievers. April strongly believes that being a highly sensitive person doesn't have to stop you from living a fully engaged life and is on a mission to help HSPs create a life on their own terms so they can manage the overwhelm and start to thrive. Find out more at www.expansiveheart.com. So April, my first question is, can you tell us what it means and what it looks like to be a highly sensitive person?
Sure, absolutely. I know some folks listening may have not heard of this term before or may have heard of the word sensitive or been called too sensitive. So I'll just expand it out just to give some more context. So being a highly sensitive person is someone born with a unique temperament trait. It's also called sensory processing sensitivity in the research, but in plain terms, you're going to hear it called high sensitivity or HSP for short. But the title, it really doesn't capture the complexity of being an HSP because there's a lot of misconceptions about it, especially if you're someone who is sensitive. It may have been used as a negative, right? Oh, you're too sensitive, you're too fragile, you know, you're too slow, whatever it is. There's a lot of labels we get heard around sensitivity. So this trait was originally put on the map by Dr. Elaine Aaron about 25 years ago. And since there's been a ton of research that's come out, which is really comforting as an HSP to know, like, hey, it's real. I'm not making this up. You know, I am feeling everything so deeply and noticing so much. So this temperament trait is found in about 20% of the population and in over 100 other species. So that tells you that it's real. It's not just trauma-based or being too sensitive, you know, whatever we hear. It's real, and it allows our nervous system and our brain to pick up subtleties and details that most people miss. So if you're an HSP, you're probably good at reading body language, noticing when someone's upset or they're having, you know, a little bit of a face change or they get a haircut, or you're picking up all those little details, which is actually pretty useful in relationships.
It is, right? In social relationships.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the advantages of being highly sensitive. So I'll, if it's okay, I'll just break down a little bit of the facts and also the core characteristics so people get a sense of what it actually looks like.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, because I know there is a lot of misunderstanding about the trait, and some people don't even know it is a trait, so you might just be hearing this for the first time. So a lot of times it's mixed up with introversion, but actually 30% of HSPs are extroverts. So if you're out there and you're like, well, I don't know if I'm an HSP because actually I really like to socialize, or maybe you like to do thrill-seeking things, you could still be an HSP. That's just one
part. That's me, and I didn't realize that, you know, I didn't realize how complex being a highly sensitive person could be, because I really love the adventure piece. I get more wiped out from it than my adventurous friends.
Exactly.
It's
so true. You can be a high sensation seeker and an introvert and an HSP, and then it gets really confusing. Like, what's happening inside of me?
Do these all really fit together? Yeah.
Right, exactly. And they might be fighting each other. Your different parts might need different things at different times, or you might experience it differently, you know, all the people out there, than maybe a non-sensation seeking extroverted HSP. There's just so many layers. It's so fascinating to kind of put all the pieces together. So let's talk about the core characteristics, because the trait can be summed up in four components, which is used as the acronym DOES. So that's depth of processing, overstimulation, emotional responsiveness and empathy, and sensitive to subtleties or sensory information. So that's the hub of it. So depth of processing, that looks like needing more time to make decisions, you know, wanting to really think and pause before you do anything, which can be frustrating, but also helpful. You might also, you know, jumping from task to task might not feel as comfortable. You know, for me, like, it takes me forever to get started with something, but then once I'm in it, I am in it and loving it and could go for hours. But
I hate multitasking.
Oh, it's so hard. Oh, I know.
Awful. Awful.
Yeah, because you're wanting to, my friends and I really like to say, like, we're deep diving, right? Like, we love a deep dive where you can just, like, get lost in something, whether it be a YouTube spiral or binging a Netflix show or just, like, researching some topic that you're interested in. Love for the deep dive. Yeah.
Love the deep dive. Multitasking just has such an uncomfortable franticness to it.
It does. It creates anxiety, right? Right. You just get that, like, energy that starts to whip up.
Yeah.
So the O, overstimulation, this is where a lot of the anxiety comes in. And this is probably our Achilles heel, I like to call it, of the trait. It's the one part that's hard. And because we're noticing so much and we take so much in, we tend to get overstimulated.
Mm-hmm.
So makes sense in this kind of busy, hectic world we live in. And we're often pressured to multitask or be doing so many things at once or work long hours that maybe isn't quite fit for our temperament. So that can be a difficulty of the trait. And then the E, emotional responsiveness and empathy. So we have a wide range of feelings and we feel it all very deeply. So we're having we feel everything.
I like to say hunger is an emotion. When I'm a highly sensitive person, I'm like, I feel it deep within my body. Like, hunger is an emotion. They're all emotions.
It's so true. Yeah. It's funny you say hunger because I like to say, like, we get hangry a lot as HSPs.
Yes.
Always have snacks.
Yep. Uh-huh. When my husband knows, like, when we travel, he's like, you got snacks in your bag? I don't want to deal with the hangriness. I'm like, I understand because I feel that hangry deeply. Like, same with the positive though, right? Like, when I see something beautiful, I feel it. I feel it. It's just a deep visceral feeling and helps me feel really connected, honestly.
Yeah, that's that's one of, I would say, like, our very palpable strengths is being able to connect to those little details, whether it be a flower or an animal or music. You know, HSPs tend to be really drawn to the arts, spirituality, nature, mm-hmm. Animals, you know, just all these different pieces. We tend to be very creative, you know, have really vivid dreams. So we just our brains are doing a lot. And a big piece of our experience, which I think the depth of processing tends to be the main piece, like the key piece, and then the emotions and the empathy show up in different ways. But we tend to be more empathetic. We have more active insulas in our brains, which is the part of the brain responsible for empathy and, you know, where our mirror neurons are. So a lot of HSPs tend to take on the emotions of other people or more impacted when they see people or interact. And that can be hard too. That can create some anxiety and overstimulation as well, whether it be yours or someone else's.
Yep, for sure. I know, like, when my husband is on edge, like, suddenly the house feels like eggshells for me. It's just so easy to take that on, and it's kind of separating myself and remembering that, you know, he's allowed to have his emotional experience too. And sometimes, like, sometimes I have to take physical distance for a second, and it really helps just sort of recalibrate. But yeah, it's easy to take that on.
It really is. And you said something really important there, which is take physical distance, right? What, even if you're in a conversation, I always recommend people, like, just pivot your body slightly or break eye contact occasionally just to start to come back to yourself. That can be really helpful to say, because it's easy to get pulled into that emotion of someone else and then we lose our centering.
Yeah.
That can be really hard. Yeah.
That's funny because if I'm in, like, I don't know, like a sort of serious or heated conversation with my husband, it's so easy for me to break eye contact. Does that sort of happen because we're trying to, like, reduce stimulation a little bit?
Regulate.
Yeah. And he's like, just look at me. And I'm like, I can't.
It's overstimulating. Yeah. That's a big piece. Because you're, you know, as an HSP, we're taking in so many details in an environment that other. So if someone is in that same situation, maybe they're taking in, okay, husband's voice is louder, or, you know, we're having a different kind of conversation, but as an HSP, you're taking it, the tone is more impactful, you're mm-hmm. reading the facial expressions, your conflict is really hard for HSPs just because it is overstimulating, and we're also, our brains are wired to really think in complex ways, like, okay, when this happened before, either in this relationship or another relationship, here's what happened, and I don't want to feel that way again, because it was really painful, and I feel it really deeply, and there's just, like, so much happening. It's like a super...
Yeah, yeah, it is. A lot. That makes sense, yeah.
So we're I imagine breaking eye contact, and I do this too, like, I'll find a point in the room to look at, to ground, if I'm in an argument, or in a conflict with my wife, where it helps me stay grounded, and I can stay in the conversation longer.
Okay. And well, I'm learning something helpful here. Okay. Yeah.
And we take in, you know, 80% of our stimulation through our eyes, so reducing visual stimulation is going to really help create some regulation. Mm-hmm. Whether it be in an argument or whether it be anywhere, really. Anytime you're out and about or you need a little bit of a break, closing your eyes can be a big help.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I know, like, for me, like, when I'm transitioning from work to parenting, having those kind of, I do, like, just a quick formal mindfulness meditation, but the closing my eyes really just sort of helps reset. And so now it's kind of cool to know why.
Yeah, exactly. It is helpful to know, okay, here's why I'm doing this, and noticing, like, oh yeah, I'm taking care of myself, which for me feels really good to know, like, oh, look at that. Just kind of coming naturally. And this brings up our last characteristic, which is the sensory sensitivity. It's not sensory integration disorder, or there's, you know, we're integrating the senses just fine. It's just that they're feeling more vibrant or intense, depending on your experience. So, like, in that conflict, you're wanting to break eye contact. That's just reducing that stimulation a bit. You know, HSPs tend to be more impacted by, like, bright lights, loud noises, rough textures, strong smells.
Oh, you know, coughing. Like, oh my God.
Like... Usually people have their thing, like, whether it's, like, you know, chewing, like misophonia, or, like, coughing, or, like, certain textures, or like, oh no, it's just so loud. And I'm curious what happens for you when you hear loud coughing.
Oh, I'm just so agitated. It's like my teeth are on edge, and my poor husband, actually, he has tics, so he does this thing where he snarfles food, so he really does cough a lot. Like, it's, he coughs a lot, and he's like, poor guy's choking to death. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm like, okay. I'm like, you cough away. It's fine. And here's some water, and I'm just, you know, sometimes
I'll
I'm able
over
to.
Here.
Yeah. Sometimes I go, you know, just take a little bit of physical distance. Other times, just kind of knowing what's happening, I'm able to just hang there with him. But
yeah.
He coughs a lot as a human, you know.
It's funny that is part of your regular experience. But it sounds like you've been able to find ways to, like, decrease the discomfort just a little bit, so you can tolerate it.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's just, obviously, sometimes it's more tolerable. But, like, if my kids are screaming at the same time, like, if my twins, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna go pick up the towels outside. Be right back.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. Just, like, building those little breaks. That's so important as an HSP or anyone that, you know, might be managing anxiety. Is just give yourself those pauses.
Great. So building breaks, that sounds like one way to sort of move through what can be a pretty stimulating day.
Yeah, downtime is so important for HSPs. You know, and some people are like, what do you mean by downtime? So downtime is any time that's for you, that's quiet, where you can kind of fill your tank up. Or I like to say, like, wring out that emotional sponge. Like, all the things you've absorbed from the day, just take a minute to just wring out a little bit. So whatever, you know, that could look so different. Like, for me, I like doing yoga, meditation, or going and walking, or journaling. Yeah. Sometimes I just like to sit quietly, you know, whether it's you could drink a cup of tea and stare out at the trees, or just, you know, play with your dog, or, you know, watch your kids play, you know, anything like that. And downtime's going to look different for everyone, but really it's just any quiet time. It could be a minute, you know, you pop off into the restroom at a party, or you're at work and you just sit at your desk and you close your eyes for a minute. Or I like to say, like, you know, wherever you can build in those pauses between one activity to the next. So, like, before you pull up to work, or at least we used to pull up to work, or on the train, you, like, that last minute before you go in, you just sit quietly and take a moment. And, like you're saying, you do some formal meditation, you could do that, or just sit and just be still for a moment. It helps bring the stimulation down.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've kind of sort of integrated that without even realizing what I was doing, but just, it's, It is. I just know, you know, you kind of start to just notice what feels good, right, in your body, and we just exactly. incorporate more of it. And yeah, I know jumping from task to task, like just sort of doing it with more deliberation, like slower, just to, sometimes really just a 3 minute, sometimes I'll do like a 3 minute meditation that just sort of helps me reset and recalibrate. It's, I remember first finding out, that I identified and I'm pretty sure I have this trait. And at first I sort of saw myself as like fragile or glass. And I think part of that is because of what you said, how sensitivity is such a loaded word in our society. I'm sure I'm not the only one from our generation growing up who heard from their parents, God, stop being so sensitive. Don't be so sensitive. And it's in a culture that sort of identifies sensitivity as weakness. It's, and I'm really glad you kind of broke it down and expanded on it, because it's really quite a neutral word, but in our culture, it's loaded. And I sort of, when I found out that I was a highly sensitive person, I felt fragile and like I had to treat myself like glass. So how do we find this? And, you know, you kind of mentioned this in your bio, how do we find this balance between honoring our HSP-ness, you know, like whatever, like our highly sensitiveness.
Our sensitivity.
But not necessarily letting it define us either, I guess, for lack of a better word. Like, how do we find that balance? Our breaks one way, but like, I think also, you know, you answered this a little bit already by just expanding on what this trait means. But yeah, how do we find that balance between honoring and not letting it define us or stopping our life because of it?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, your experience is so common. A lot of times when people realize they're highly sensitive, in some ways it's like, it's amazing. It's a light bulb, right? Like I always say, it was my missing puzzle piece. It helped me understand myself in so many more ways. And it can be hard if you're in a difficult place with it, where you are feeling overstimulated, burnt out, compassion fatigue, whatever it is. It can feel like a burden. You know, people are like, "Well, oh, I was born this way. That means, oh, I'm stuck with this."
Yeah, it can feel like a doom. Like we're doomed almost if we're feeling like burnt out or
Absolutely, and I understand that. You know, there are incredible things about this trait, and I would never trade it in for anything. And, but you know, the shadow side of it, the dark side is, you know, you're going to be more exhausted easily. You're going to be more overstimulated easily. You're going to feel every, the hard parts deeper, but
that's any trait, right? Like any trait, there's upsides and
downsides,
to kind of balance itself out. Right. Yeah.
And the good parts of the trait are so, for me, so much better than these darker parts. And there's something, something that's come out in the research is part of our trait called vantage sensitivity or differential susceptibility. What that means is when we're having a little bit of support or, we have a good relationship or anything that's positive in our life, we actually use that and we thrive more than the non-HSP, which is incredible. Yeah. And I kind of feel guilty about it a little bit, but it's,
but it also, you know, it's, we still accept that whole shadow side, right? Like it still comes with, it's not smooth sailing or 100% easy either. So
even when things are going, when things feel hard, one little bright spot, whether that be connecting with a neighbor, seeing a therapist, I'm biased, I'm going to say seeing a therapist, because I'm a therapist, you know, having a show you really like, or an animal in your life, or whatever it is, anything that's positive is going to bolster you in a way that's not accessible to the non-HSP, because you're going to be noticing all the little joys of that experience, and you're going to be feeling it so deeply. So any little thing you do, right? Let's say you incorporate 3 minutes of downtime between activities, or even just 1 minute, or you give yourself I take Saturdays off. That's my recharge day every week, like clockwork. You know, that to me, it does so much, right?
Yeah, there's just see what you're saying.
Little things to weave in, or boundaries are really important too. So for me, my phone is almost 99% of the time on do not disturb. I want to choose to opt in. I don't want that simulation or interruption. And if there's an emergency, of course, that might be different. If you have kids, that might be a little bit different, but you can set boundaries for yourself. I love digital boundaries are so important. Or you give yourself permission to build in a pause before you say yes, because we have a hard time setting boundaries or saying no, protecting our energy. So protecting your energy and your time and getting those stimulation levels down is so important. And when you do, you're going to feel it so much as an HSP.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many pieces, but that's one of them. It's just taking more quiet time.
Yeah. Okay. I really love how you have some really practical ways to support ourselves, right? Like some
doesn't have to be complicated. Does not have to be complicated. It's actually really basic. Clients will come into my office and they're super anxious or they're depressed. And it's, you know, it feels strange, but sometimes it's the littlest things. I'm like, actually, you need to get really basic here. How much sleep are you getting? How much quiet time are you getting? You know, how much are you saying yes when you don't want to? You know, there's just little things that making those changes actually creates a big difference. It's incredible to watch.
And, you know, you mentioned just since, you know, this is a show about anxiety, you kind of already mentioned that the connection between being an HSP and experiencing anxiety has to do with like the overstimulation bit. Is there anything you can expand on there? Anything you want to add to like, what's sort of this connection between, because I think we often see them together.
Exactly.
A lot of times we'll see, a lot of times we'll see some anxiety in being a highly sensitive person. And why is that? Or what can you expand on there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many reasons why we get anxious. You know, it could be brain chemistry, which is, you know, they're still trying to figure out the specifics of that, you know, to lifestyle factors, to excess stress. But I often do see, like you're saying, the overstimulation being the source of the anxiety, which makes sense when we think about it. They feel very similar. You know, just think of what anxiety feels like lots of worry and, you know, mind is racing, you know, having trouble sleeping, you know, our digestive system is off.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, there's so many ways anxiety can show up. And for us as HSPs, you know, that overstimulation comes when we're in like a really noisy environment, you know, when we're having too many social engagements back to back, we're in a large crowd, you know, we're inundated by a busy schedule or too many people, or multitasking for a long period of time. You know, we don't have enough quiet time, or we're in like high pressure conflicts. Or another thing we kind of hinted about is being observed. We don't really like to be watched.
No.
So it's like we have to be on, right? There's a different level of engagement there. So there's so many things that our system is just aware of, and it's hard to explain, but it's like this being on feeling. Like, if you're an HSP and you're out there and you can resonate with, like, if you're in the house and let's say you have a roommate and they're in the next room, you're not interacting, but you know they're there, you can feel it, you can't relax in the same way as when you're in the house by yourself.
Yep.
It's just like there's something on in us that is just always kind of tuned in, and that's exhausting. It takes a lot of energy. And it can easily make us feel
right? Anxiety, burnout, stress and then, may come up.
Exactly. And the more that you're in that state, you know, your nervous system gets into that dysregulated state. So in that fight, flight, or freeze mode more often, you're just going to spill over into anxiety a lot more. So there's some physiological pieces around the nervous system getting stimulated and then chronically overstimulated or stressed. And then we're just kind of stuck in that anxious place where mind is racing all the time. Your body is jittery. You know, all your systems start to go offline. Maybe you're getting sick more often. You're having digestive issues, right? There's so many things that maybe you're getting migraines. You know, there's so many ways that it shows up. So it's definitely complex. But for us as HSPs, a very straightforward way to start to manage the anxiety is to tackle the overstimulation. And that be scheduling, your physical environment, and how you're spending time with yourself.
Yeah. So it sounds like, which is, you know, empowering to hear that being an HSP doesn't mean that we're doomed to being anxious. It sounds like it's more like when we're a dysregulated HSP, anxiety may be more likely to come up, and that's how it shows up for
Absolutely.
Us.
And I think it's important to say, most HSPs, you don't even know they're highly sensitive. Yeah, maybe they get a little more emotional, but, or, you know, maybe they're taking things more, you know, in more, they need a little bit more time to warm up. But generally speaking, I don't like to use this term, but like a healthy HSP or an HSP that is like getting good self-care is going to just be thriving. They might be doing it quietly, but you're not really going to notice the trait as much when your lifestyle is aligned and when the people in your life are supportive. You know, and we all have some of that to manage with family and coworkers, right? The people that we don't necessarily choose. But, you know, just having one or two people in your life that really support you and you can, like, just be your full HSP self. So, yeah, I want people to know, like, it's not, doesn't have to be a negative in your life. It can actually be a positive. It's just a matter of taking a little bit, you know, a little bit more self-care, and it goes a long way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of times we see self-care as, sometimes it has this ooey gooey undertone and worse, this self-indulgent, right?
Right.
Undertone. And so, I imagine you probably see it the same way, but I like to describe it as, like, self-care is just a practical skill. Like, it's just, right? As humans, we all have, we're a living human breathing organism. We have needs, and, self-care is just a practical way to make sure those needs are getting met, right? If we're living and breathing as an organism, we're going to have needs.
Absolutely. I mean, I like to reframe self-care as just, like, recharge time.
Yeah.
And for an HSP, I like to bring in, I like to call it meaningful self-care. So self-care for us is not just taking a bath, going, getting a massage, right? Those are great too. But it's really connecting, filling ourselves up with nature, arts, whatever really helps us feel creative and inspired and nourished. So it's just taking it a level deeper. And, you know, it's like I always say, it's like your computer. You wouldn't run your computer all day, every day, because what would happen? It's going to crash. It's going to start to, you know, go on the fritz. We're the same way, right? We need quiet time. We need to shut down for a bit, even though society seems to think that we are robots. We're not. We're still humans.
I know. There's this, like, really collective common misconception that we just, as humans, don't have needs. But, like, we do, right? Like, we just do.
And we often, you kind of hinted at it, like, we often feel guilty, right? For indulgent, for taking that time to take care of ourselves, especially if you're a parent. I'm not a parent, but I can imagine if I was a parent, I'd feel even more guilty for taking time. And we know that when we take time, we treat ourselves kindly, it's actually more motivating and will actually be more productive. So that's a big conversation for the HSP, is managing the guilt of saying no, setting limits, prioritizing ourselves. And it's the key to being able to thrive.
Yeah. And I, you know, those things were really hard for me at first, especially being a new parent and taking, I found, you know, I have 2 2.5-year-olds, and when they were newborns, it was like overstimulation central. It was like, sometimes I would just need I got touched out really easily, more so than, like, my husband or maybe some other people that I knew. And it was really hard. Like, there was so much chitter chatter about, I am not motherly. I'm not, I'm selfish. I'm going to be really bad at this. And it was just something that got easier with time, because I saw that, like, when I took those, honestly, often it was just like a minute breather, just a second, just knowing that that was there, that sort of, like, lifeline, right? To just grab onto for a second. Mm-hmm. And taking it made me show up as such a better present parent that was able to, like, engage. And, you know, I've seen how that's different for my kids. And I think those things are so hard at first to sort of set boundaries, to take that time to if we're used to going and pushing through, it's going to feel really foreign and a little even risky. Like, are we sure?
Yeah.
And I know for me, just with practice, like, in seeing the results, like, oh yeah, this just makes sense. Like, it just became much more practical and common sense. Yeah.
And it's important to say, you know, to not compare yourself, like, what are all the other parents doing, or what are all the other people doing? But looking for yourself, like, what works for me? That's going to be really important as an HSP, you know, and seeing, like, oh yeah, I'm going to build in these little breaks. I'm going to take a minute. And you get to see that when you are showing up, whether it be with your kids or with your family, your friends, you're actually more present. So I always say, like, quality over quantity. You know, when I am showing up, I want it to be more I want to be more present versus just showing up out of obligation, which I did for many years.
Yeah.
And it doesn't serve the relationship at all, especially with kids, right? Kids want you to be present. They're like, they want eye contact and they want to be engaged. They want
They want to touch
they
and
want to
play
touch.
and
They want you to have, you want you to mirror them and really get involved. And doing that some of the time versus just being there, 'cause, I mean, just being around kids, like sometimes you're just there, but maybe you're tired or, I've felt that where I'm like, okay, I'm just here, but I'm not really like super excited about or energized. But with my nephews, I've realized like, oh, just a little bit of time is better than trying to be with them all the time and then not really
And
being
being
engaged.
capped, right?
Right,
Right. Like being
capped.
capped and not
Exactly.
engaged and for
Right,
sure.
exactly. So yeah, that's a big piece just to say, you know what? I always say like live on your own terms, which means make decisions based on what you need as an HSP, not what others expect of you. And that's another, and believe me, I know that is easier said than done.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing. It is, but like I think it just gets easier with practice and when we actually
Yes.
see the practicality of it and how well it works. But like the first few times, the first few dozen times of doing it can feel like, am I upsetting people? Am I, but there's a lot of
Right.
like self-doubt, right? And it feels a little risky, but I think it's like anything, that experiential learning, the more we do it and see how well it works, the more intuitive it becomes.
It's true. Yeah, it does become more intuitive and more easeful over time. But in the beginning, it can feel messy and there can be guilt and it can feel scary and I always recommend like start slow, practice with someone that you feel safe with, maybe saying no or asking for something different where you know it's going to be a safe space. And just start with low stakes
Low stakes,
changes.
like that. Yeah, low stakes.
Yeah, and ease
Start
into it.
easy, start slow. Yeah, that's great.
Exactly.
Yeah, so gosh, thank you so much for this conversation. I know I personally found it pretty insightful too. I'm sure all of our listeners will as well, whether they identify or not, because chances are everybody has a highly sensitive person in their life, right? It's not exactly uncommon.
Yep, high chances of
High
that.
chances. Yeah, it's not exactly abnormal. So I would love for you to remind us where we can find you.
Sure. So if anyone is interested, they can find me at expansiveheart.com. There's lots of resources for HSPs, and then I also have a guide for reducing overwhelm on that website as well.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
And thank you so much for hopping on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. This is such a rich conversation, and I always appreciate being able to talk about it. And hopefully, someone out there is listening and will discover it about themselves.
Well, at the very least, I have some
Yeah.
takeaways. So
Beautiful.
your half hour is not all in vain.
I love it.
Oh, that's our episode. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and take a minute to write a review on iTunes so that we can reach and support more people. If you're looking for more resources like one-on-one coaching or have a question you'd like answered on the show, please visit notanotheranxietyshow.com. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.